I'm Frank Vaughn. It's September 27th, 2024, and I'm back at you with another video to discuss the geopolitical state of the world. Vladimir Zelensky has completed his U.S. trip, pitching his plan for World War III to U.S. leaders, and some of them, including the sitting president, who barely knows where he is, so I should probably say the staffers who control his Twitter account, seem to have listened to him and are looking to aggravate further the conflict in Ukraine rather than getting back to the table. Now, this was such flagrant election interference in the United States that I don't think Zed had any choice but to sit down with Donald Trump as well. So he presented himself at Trump Tower and had a conversation with Donald Trump. And I think everybody should go and check out the little bit of media that they did, because there's clearly tension there and Trump dominated. And Trump wants peace. And it takes two people to sit down at a table. Now, the Russians have been waiting and willing to sit down at many different times, but it is the West that stonewalls peace and continues to ensure that hundreds of thousands more lives are thrown away needlessly. Again, the killing should stop. It is useless. It's pointless. Peace was on the table. And it was the West that ripped peace off the table. Now, hopefully, the Russians show restraint in the coming months until we can get through the election at the very least, because the election is the only shot we have at peace. Now, the title of this video will have something to do with Pierre Polyev. I've already made up my mind about that because I want to discuss Pierre Polyev. And this is one of the biggest shortfalls of the Conservative Party right now, is their pro-war stance on Ukraine. Again, there just doesn't seem to be a voice in Parliament talking sense. However, if Donald Trump wins the election, the state of the conversation will change. We will go from trying to destroy the planet to trying to save the planet. We may be successful. We may not be successful. But the conversation in the entire Western world will change, because that is how things have worked in the West as long as I've been alive. Where the Americans go, everybody follows in their own ways. This notion that Polyev is just MAGA North it's absurd. Because it doesn't even approach it. If it did, he'd be calling for peace in Ukraine. But that being said, there's this idea that permeates political conversations that Polyev is just more of the same, and the Conservative Party in its modern form is just the Liberal Party, just painted blue. And when we were talking about this very subject under the leadership of Andrew Scheer and under the abysmal leadership of Aaron O'Toole, there was a lot more point and structure to that argument. However, where is the CPC now different? They're very different when it comes to common sense issues like women's only spaces and the entire notion of gender ideology. They've been very outspoken about their common sense approach to that, which is male is male and female is female, and women should be protected from predation by males dressed in dresses. I think that's pretty common sense. And your children should be protected from predation by those who use or want to use public education and other vehicles to corrupt the minds of your young before puberty and encourage them to walk a life of a different gender identity, even though it's going to be nothing but destruction. Another way that they're different is the opposition to the carbon tax. Aaron O'Toole was very wishy-washy on the subject, talked about carbon prices versus carbon taxing, all this stuff. Polyev just wants to get rid of it. Another key difference with the CPC now is they are not afraid to talk about legal gun ownership, and they are not afraid to take positions that are quite controversial on the subject, controversial on the left, controversial in terms of how the media treats these subjects, not really controversial when it comes to common sense, in terms of protecting lawful gun owners and actually going after criminals. Look, the gangbangers on the streets that are committing shootings every single day are not using legal firearms. Everything they're doing is illegal. And penalizing people who obey the law doesn't fix the problem. It's just common sense. Not only will they repeal C-21, there's reason to believe that they will further enshrine the rights of Canadians to own firearms. Actually, I shouldn't say rights because we don't have rights, but will further enshrine and empower legal, law-abiding gun owners to maintain ownership of their firearms. These are some pretty key differences, because the two previous leaders didn't really want to discuss these things in public. Sure, they had policy, but they didn't. They weren't very good at expanding on those policies. Aaron O'Toole even flip-flopped in the midst of his campaign, went from having one policy to another, which is just a recipe for defeat. Nobody respects weakness like that in the middle of a campaign. There are other issues. And there are things that I can be critical of the Conservative Party over. But I think it's safe to say that they have shifted. Now, people will say, where's Polyev been all these years? Particularly PPC bots who love Maxime Bernier. Listen, when you play the game of politics, when you play the game of party politics, and this is in no way a defense of those things, when there's a leadership, when there is a head of the party and they have their team and they have the direction that they're going, if you want to advocate for a different direction within the party, the only two parties that have ever governed this country within the party, you have to wait your turn. Now, during Aaron O'Toole's leadership, what did Polyev do? When we were at the peak of the Freedom Convoy, he showed up at the Freedom Convoy, voiced his support, was there, and showed an interest in what Canadians were actually thinking at the time. He's been demonized for it ever since, and was condemned by his own leader for doing so. But Aaron was on the way out, and everybody could smell the blood in the water, and that there was going to be a leadership race, and Pierre wanted to win it. We cut Maxime Bernier the same slack that we absolutely have to cut the CPC right now. It is a fait accompli. They're going to win the next election. This is what Canada wants to do. This is what we're capable of doing. This is what the electorate is capable of doing. The CPC message has become much firmer. It is not wishy-washy. And on several subjects, which I've just highlighted, they are better. Better than they've been in a long time. Now, people look back and they say when Max was in government under Stephen Harper, and I've been critical of that role as well, and I was critical even when I was involved with Max. He was very pro-free trade with China. He was the most outspoken advocate in the Conservative caucus for selling out every national interest he could get his hands on to the Chinese. He was so pro-China, so pro-getting in bed with the communists through free trade, that he offended even Stephen Harper. He also signed us up for the agendas. People forget his role in that and forget all the times that he delivered speeches on behalf of Stephen Harper, that he was his foreign minister, his minister of industry, the second in command of the government, one of the most powerful people in the country, while he served in the Conservative Party, waiting his turn to try and become leader. And when he went and tried to become leader in 2017, he had his policies, which he brought to the table. And it didn't work out because, like I've said before, the shredding of the ballots, the phantom votes that showed up, I don't think the 2017 election was fair. Regardless of what I feel about Max now and the PPC and who he is and what he's proven himself to be. But he, too, waited his turn. The same slack that we cut him has to be cut to Polyev. Because if he hadn't have waited his turn, he wouldn't be leader now, and we wouldn't have the very real policy differences and approach to advocating for those policies, because the CPC is far more outspoken than it has been under Scheer and O'Toole. They're fundamentally different. They might not go all the way that you want, but I mean, Pierre's come out and said, no WEF. We're going to ban our government from being involved. That's pretty big. You'd think the people who were fed up with the lukewarm milquetoast CPC prior to this time would be happy about the movement. But there's a decided group of people who are still whining and wailing and just wanting more. Look, this is how progress is made. Look at the polls. Look at the position he's in. Even if you don't like the CPC and even if you don't like Polyev, they must have their chance. The electorate is willing to do this. And if you put them in office and they fail, then there might open up another opportunity for something different. But as it sits right now, the PPC was completely discredited in 2019. Actually, I should say end of 2019, the beginning of 2020, when Max went on vacation instead of continuing to be a leader. And hiding the fact that he was drawing a huge wage from his membership until after the election, and up to this point, using most of the money that he's raising to pay himself and his friends on the staff. It's a mess. He's not your hero. And maybe Pierre's not our hero either. But he deserves his chance. And he's going to get his chance, because that is what Canada can actually get done in the immediate future. And there's a lot of good on the table, and we should hold him accountable. And if in the future they form a government and they don't do what they say they're going to do, you will see me in front of a camera complaining about that, and maybe I'll do some other things complaining about that too. But this is where we're at. Now, the days of me, at the moment, full-throatedly endorsing any political party are over. I'm voting Conservative. That's it. I'm voting CPC. There's no way around it. I'm going to do it. But I'm not a Conservative Party member anymore, and I don't know if I will be anytime in the future. But can you not see how the conversation has changed? There's a victory here, and that victory will be enhanced when, hopefully, Trump gets back into office, because the world needs Trump. It's not hyperbole. The only guy talking about saving the world from World War III, I don't understand how people could even consider the other side. Forget everything else. Forget how they gaslit us and said, Biden's healthy. He's at the pinnacle of health. And Joe Scarborough, 6 o'clock in the morning on primetime television, telling his viewers to go F themselves, actually said F you, if you don't think that Biden's at his peak of intellectual brilliance just before the debate showed that he's barely even there. The man's not leading the West. The guy's on a beach most of the time. I don't know who's in charge. Hopefully it's not the gender diverse rainbow brigade that they have ensconced in the White House right now. Like, I mean, it's bad. And Kamala doesn't even know where she is. The reason they didn't pull Biden is they're just like, please God, keep that man together long enough to win the election, and then we will get him out of there as fast as possible, and then Kamala can assume it. They have to keep her out of view because she's so vacuous. She has such a terrible record. She is a far-left politician who doesn't even know where she is. I actually have sympathy and respect for the situation the Democrats found themselves in, as evil as they are. And it's not just the Democrats. It's also a lot of people in the Republican Party, too, the bad Republicans. Not the people, the neocons, who support the Democrats now. The choices they had were so bad. You have a senile old man who shouldn't be there, and you have an intellectually vacuous airhead, and you got to try and package up and sell one or the other. That's a really tough choice. That's a bind. But it was so bad for Biden, they had to go with Kamala. And this is why she doesn't want to give interviews that aren't friendly. This is why she doesn't want to debate unless she can pick the moderators, pick the network. They did the ABC debate. Her best friend was responsible for setting it up. They probably gave her the questions ahead of time. They changed the lighting so Trump looked like the, as a person sitting in front of a green screen right now in a studio. Admittedly, the lighting isn't perfect in here. I probably need new lights, but that's just something down the road. The way you light people affects how people perceive them. And they lit Trump a certain way, and they lit her a certain way. And they put the lights right in his face so that he couldn't stare straight ahead. He had to constantly keep moving his eyes. It was set up to fail, and the man still walked in there and did a half-decent job. Kamala refused 2 other debates, and now she wants to complain about the fact that Trump doesn't want to do it after voting has started. His position is entirely reasonable, just like his position on getting peace done and saving the world. You know, it just blows my mind. But if Trump gets in, everything changes and the conversation changes. Another thing about the Conservatives that I've heard is that they're not being, they talk about economic migration. And it's the sound of their rhetoric is almost very status quo. It's almost shruggy. It's almost like, you know, they don't want to come right out and say something. And maybe they don't. Look, one of the reasons I don't like politics is it's a game of, I'm a pragmatist, but I am not pragmatic enough for politics. I tried it once. I did the best I could with it. Once again, my screen shut off. Hopefully it doesn't interrupt the video too badly. I did the best I could without compromising myself, and there's still some things I regret. I had to advocate for certain ideas I didn't think were bad ideas, but I didn't think were necessary. So, I mean, it's water under the bridge now. When you're trying to convince the electorate to vote for you, you got to thread that needle. And if you want to do it honestly, you don't want to lie to people. So you have to be very careful with what you say. The immigration problem, the mass immigration problem that is driving up your prices, that is making Canada unaffordable, that is breaking our social services. Anybody that says any other thing except foreign investment and mass immigration are responsible for inflation and breaking the economy, except for printing money, that's the other cause, and the only reason we're printing money is because everything else is broken. If they don't include mass immigration as the principal cause, they're gaslighting you, they're lying to you, or they just don't know what they're talking about. This is a problem. I don't want to say it solves itself, but the pivot is coming on it, regardless of who's in office. I don't care if you elect Jagmeet Singh. They're going to pivot on it. They're already pivoting on it. Justin Trudeau tweeted one of the most reasonable things I've seen about a week, 2 weeks ago, but it only existed for 5 minutes before he deleted it. I'm not going to get into what it was, but it was to do with people taking advantage of the immigration system. Canada is being indecently assaulted, thoroughly taken advantage of. We're used as a resource colony. People are gaming our refugee system. People are gaming our asylum system. People are gaming our international student system. It's breaking us. It's going to change. And I have more faith in a conservative government to change in a reasonable way than I do the current government that broke everything. These people talk about making things better for Canada. Things have not gotten better. They've only gotten worse under their leadership. I can't fathom, and it's the same thing with Kamala, I can't fathom how they can pose as change candidates for the very things and problems that they created and brought into being. So to get to the point, there is a significant difference between the CPC now and the CPC before. I think they're worth a vote. They're going to get mine. And that's all I can say about it. Another thing I want to say, actually, this just came to my mind. Andrew Scheer. I take a measure of pride seeing Andrew Scheer sit beside Polyev in the House. If there's anything that I've been wrong about that I regret over the last several years going all the way back, it's how I viewed Scheer's leadership. Now, it's not to say he wasn't milquetoast, he was. But was he, or was it his advisors and the pressure that was coming at him from all sides? I think Andrew's a good guy. I really do. And Bernier lied a lot about what the CPC did to him. The chapter of the book, which I highlighted in another video, how he released this chapter of the book to public so they could read it, and it offended CPC leadership. There was no book. It was a myth. The other myth was that the CPC stopped him from traveling because he was going around the country and he was fundraising for different MPs. And it stopped. And he told his people like myself, that the CPC banned him from traveling. It never happened. Maxime concocted a campaign based on lies to undermine the CPC for his own purposes and his own objectives. And he's done very well for himself. And he's attached to himself a very loyal following. And I would encourage you to keep sending him money because you probably don't need it. He does. He needs it more than you. I don't think Andrew Scheer was a bad guy. I think I read his leadership wrong. I don't think he led right. I don't think he led from a position of strength, but man, he looks like a champion compared to Aaron O'Toole, to be completely honest. And it just, I feel good to see him sitting beside Polyev. It sends a really good message to me now that I know the full truth, because back then, I didn't. You think people are being honest with you. They aren't. There's so many liars and bad people involved in politics that it really does drive an honest man to want to run in the other direction. And I have nothing but respect for people who do. Anyway, I think that's enough for today. If you like the work and you want to support it, please do. Look, you know, I want to say, I don't have a bad life. Things have changed for me. I have a nice house. My kids are comfortable. They've got space to roam in. This is not 2019 and 2020, where things were very different for me. I was, you know, I think if people knew the conditions that I was living in at the time, first off, you'd know that my wife married me for love, not money. But, you know, you might find it quite surprising. And that has changed. I live in a, you know, a clean house. It's sealed. It's not drafty. It's not buggy. Unlike many people out there right now, I'm not housing insecure. I'm here. But that being said, the one thing I don't have is money. You got to have some money to grease the wheels. If you want to support the work, you can. Via the website, you know how to do it. But there's no paywall, there's no advertising, and there's not going to be. This is a freely given thing. If you want to support it, you can, but you don't have to. And that's the end of the pitch.